it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Obnoxious Office Holiday Party Goer.
Mr. Obnoxious Office Holiday Party Goer.
Sure, Jessica from accounting looks hot, but do you really think she's going to give you the time of day just because you've had a few and just happen to be wearing a Santa hat?
Say ho, 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 you ho.
Do you think, Mr. Obnoxious Office Holiday Party Goer, that everyone in shipping and receiving wants you to photocopy parts of yourself?
Your butt's like the Shroud of Turin.
Is that a mistletoe belt buckle?
And that's never been funny, yeah.
So this holiday season, go easy on the eggnog and steer clear of the guy who's most likely to start the new year with a new job. Mr. Obnoxious Office Holiday Party Goer, a real American hero.
Mr. Obnoxious Office Holiday Party Goer.
Nice job, idiot. That was the boss's daughter.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning. Welcome to Tuesday, December 21st. Kara, you got grease all over the mic there.
That's not grease.
There is grease. I can see it from
there's
the sink.
There's none. There's none. It's salsa.
Oh, it's salsa. Excuse me.
get your glossy liquids right.
Yeah. Well, she's having her breakfast right here in the studio.
Sorry,
this
guys,
morning.
Sorry, guys. I didn't realize it was going to be an issue, but, you know.
Why? Oh, it's not an issue to chew on the air?
I'm not even chewing. I'm just swallowing a bit what's left.
Yeah, right. Did you finish it?
So good. Yes,
yeah, but how can you enjoy it when you have to eat it rushed and everything, you know?
Do you know when you're just hungry?
No.
You want to get it in?
Mm-hmm.
You just want to get it in? And
uh-huh.
You know, you're like, this thing, I'm not going to even eat till about 3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In that case, what were you having there?
It's a nice processed breakfast quesadilla from yours truly, Taco Bell. And it's,
you're a big fan, aren't you?
Well, it's literally across the street, and so if I haven't eaten breakfast, sometimes it goes down.
Oh.
But so yeah, it's just basically tortilla and egg and salsa and cheese.
Sounds good.
It hits the spot.
Yeah.
The spot. Well, it's protein.
I can imagine. I can imagine it does hit the spot.
Hits it hard.
Yeah.
Hits it good. Hits it deep. Nasty. So I did go to Starbucks and I got a nice coffee and
but you left it in the car.
I left it in the car and
uh-huh.
It's in the car.
Yeah.
And I got hit on by a couple old men. It was nice.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, really.
What
good.
A way to start your morning.
It
huh?
was nice. I took it as a.
What is old men like 50?
Mm-hmm.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, oldish.
I guess when I was 29, 50 was old for
yeah.
me too. Yeah. So what did they want?
Well, he was just like, you've got the most beautiful eyes.
Mm.
I was like, well, thank you very much.
Where was that? At Starbucks?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So men do that, huh?
Yeah, I was into it.
They do
it.
Make passes at Starbucks and
I
shit.
Was into it.
Yeah. I know. You like the attention.
I'll take it. I was like, thank you. It was a good Christmas present.
You'll take it.
But then he like left, and then he came back like he was going to talk some more, and I was like, I got to go.
Yeah.
Because if you're nice, people misread it.
Yeah. You see, you're eating on the air? Okay.
Well,
no, but wait a minute. You said you wouldn't.
It's done. It's just this piece was
okay,
pulling
in. Okay, I'm done talking to you.
I'm sorry. This piece was like hanging out. It was already like ready to go. It had the salsa on it and the pico. And I couldn't help it. I'm done. See, it's done.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, well, in the meantime, we're going to bring in our guest. We have a very special guest. Whoops, I'm running out of air. We have a very special guest this morning, Brendan Huffman. He's from the show Off the Presses here every Wednesday at 10 o'clock on Channel 2. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning. Glad I bumped into Kara at Starbucks so she could bring me into the studio today.
Thank you
see,
very much.
We are considered old for her.
No, I like old men, though. I have a thing for them.
Yeah.
They've got a special place.
You do,
for
huh? Not that it makes us feel any better, but you know.
This guy was he was a little bit pushing it. He was probably closer. He was in his 50s ish.
Okay.
He was like a distinguished looking man, but you know at the same time it's like It's just a compliment. I went with it. I was good.
I see. Okay.
I love all ages. It's fine. We're
don't
good.
We all? Don't we all? I think men don't discriminate as much as women do as far as age. You know.
Men discriminate.
We'll go with whatever we can get.
Men discriminate. Incredibly more. Incredibly more.
Based on looks, not on age.
No, they do on age. men have very inflated views of themselves and what they're entitled to, and they go after.
Wow, what a gross generalization.
And it's very accurate, and you know it is. So no, men that are in your age bracket, and of course this doesn't apply to you because you're married and someone to your age range, so not you. But generally speaking, if you're a single male in this age bracket, men tend to not go for women in their age. As you get older.
That's not true.
That's freaking true. I didn't make it up.
It's not true.
Isn't it true, Brendan? It's so true.
Younger women. Maybe they would rather have younger women.
No, but
right?
They would prefer and go after
Brendan
younger women.
Brendan is like, what are you talking about?
Are you married or single?
I'm married. My wife is 22.
Yeah, there you go. You see?
There you go.
He doesn't discriminate.
No, seriously. What's the deal? Is she 22?
No, she's my age.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, but when did y'all get married?
12 years ago.
Right, there you go.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Are you originally from here, Brendan, from L.A.?
Third generation Angeleno, grew up on the west side.
Really?
Moved to the Valley a few years ago because the schools were better. Mm-hmm. There's less traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up having more family here and just more kid activities. The Valley is really more kid-friendly than the west side.
Yeah, it is more family kind of a community.
It's more boring, no offense, but let's be honest. It's
for you, it is, yeah. I mean, for most people, it is boring.
Like, if I had a kid, believe me, I'd be up in Sherman Oaks or something like that, you know?
Yeah, it depends what you're into. The west side, the traffic is just so unbearable on the west side.
It's punishing, isn't it?
It is, and the road work on the Sunset Boulevard Bridge.
They're working on that right now?
Yeah, so in a couple of years, the traffic will flow better, but in the meantime, it's a huge headache.
It's murder, huh? Mm. Yeah.
Almost.
Wow. So do you have to commute there pretty often?
No, I live in Studio City. My office is in Studio City, my radio station is in Sherman Oaks.
There you go.
Everything's pretty
close.
Yeah, when you live in L.A., you got to think about these things, you know?
That's how we start off conversations at cocktail parties. Hey, where do you live? What's your commute like?
Yeah, it is, actually. I mean,
where else do you talk about that?
That's actually what they do talk about. Where you're from, how far is your drive?
But, you know, another thing that goes with it is people always use that as an excuse, you know, for being late and shit.
No, you can blame anything on L.A. You really can.
Yeah, I know. It's easy, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's partly true.
Not really.
No, I mean, you can
not really. There's a lot of great things about L.A. You know, you got to admit. You know what? I've lived here for like 30-some years, and I've had times when I hated L.A., but I realized those were the times when I hated myself, you know? You can't blame yourself on, I mean, your problems on L.A., you know? It's a great place. It's a great place. You just have to...
So when I'm sitting in traffic, then I'm trying to only go 5 miles, and a jogger keeps passing me by, I'm sitting there, and I'm angry... That somehow there's something wrong. I don't like something about myself.
Right. You know what?
Yeah,
you go to other big cities and you see what it's like. Go to New York City, you know, and try to drive there or try to drive.
You don't drive. You get around actually in New York because there's public transportation.
Okay. Well.
Any time of the day or the night. Here, I'm just saying, you know, you get upset. You get upset because you're sitting in traffic. You start to feel feverish. You got to go to the bathroom. You know, there's nowhere to go.
Right.
So you better hold it. You better tell yourself it's not
Brendan, what are some of the places you've been to? I mean, haven't you seen this kind of traffic in other places?
Of course. In any urban area, there's going to be a ton of traffic. What people don't understand is that the city of L.A. and L.A. County is huge, not just in geography, but in population. We're the eighth largest state here in L.A. County in terms of population.
Really? Wow.
Right. And we also have this culture where we like big houses and big lawns. We're not used to downsizing and building up the way they are in, say, Chicago, New York, and other cities. So it's something we have to get used to. It's very expensive to do public transportation in L.A. County, not to put your audience to sleep, but because of the vastness of L.A. County, also the rock, if we want to build subways, the rock is harder to dig through than other parts. Yeah.
Wow.
And we have mountain ranges in the way. Uh-huh. You know, the Red Line... You know, we do have a subway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes like 5 miles.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. A little further than that.
It's actually pretty clean. I've done it twice because I kind of live in Hollywood, so you can go to downtown and stuff.
Yeah, which makes it much more convenient. So as far as, you know, what to do in L.A., it depends what you're into. I think our culture is more outdoorsy.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up on the water, so unlike Wisconsin or even Seattle, you can sail all year round in L.A.
Yeah.
You can surf all year round in L.A. without having to put on, you know, 5-inch wetsuit or dry suit to protect you from the elements. There are tons of sports. This is a mecca for baseball players and basketball players and football players. You go to other states, you just don't have that. We're very outdoorsy here.
Wow. Yeah. You see, now he's got a view of L.A. because he's lived here for, you know, I mean, three generations, he says. And, you know, and you talk about these things. You talk about the politics of L.A. and stuff like that. What are some of the concerns? I mean, you mentioned some great things about L.A., and that's true. I never realized that, you know, it's a mecca for baseball players and athletes and stuff.
And lawyers.
And lawyers, too. There you go. You see a lot.
Like, is it a big lawyer state?
Oh, yeah. We're probably the lawsuit capital of the world. Not just because of the lawyers, but we have laws that are written to the intent was to protect consumers, protect the environment, and other important things. But we seem to have gone further than other states and countries, and the laws also invite abuse of that system.
So can you give us an example of something like that? I mean, how do people abuse the system?
Sure. Well, there's something we have something called CEQA, which stands for the California Environmental Quality Act, was signed by Governor Ronald Reagan in 1970 on the first Earth Day, which I think is April 20th or so. And what that does, it triggers an environmental review for almost any project, whether it's building a freeway, a dam, a large hotel. And a lot of the people who are fighting development use CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, to fight it. So CEQA is not always used as an environmental protection law. It's often just a NIMBY law, NIMBY, not in my backyard. And there are dozens of lawyers who make a lot of money fighting these lawsuits back, you know, representing developers and representing the community. But the funny thing about California is that we're all NIMBYs. We want development if it generates tax revenue and jobs, as long as it's not anywhere near us and we're going to have no traffic impact. So that's just one of the ironies of living in California.
So it's just kind of like who's going to win this one? That's just like this one for that one. Who wins it? It's just there's really no bigger, you know, no one's really saving the environment through this act or what?
Well, I think California's environment has improved.
It has improved.
If you came to San Fernando Valley 30 years ago, you would probably get smog sick. Now,
I remember that. There used to be like a rusty top of a cloud above, over the valley.
So there are a lot of reasons for that. And remember, in the valley, we've increased the population by 1 million people in the last 30 years, and the air quality is much better. Where LAUSD and the other school districts, they don't send kids home anymore when it's a hot day. Growing up on the west side in the 70s when we had really bad smog, even on the west side, LAUSD was sending kids home when it hit 100 degrees. And I remember getting smog sick on the west side. The valley, we'd never come to the valley.
What's smog sickness like?
Smog, it makes, it's nauseous. You know, obviously, your eyes get watery and you feel grimy, but inside you've inhaled a lot of chemicals, ozone, carbon monoxide, stuff like that, and that triggers nausea. So I don't think anyone was dying from it, but smog does obviously create asthma and other health hazards and probably contributes to lung cancer to some extent.
Right. So how do they cut back on the pollution? I mean, what do they have to tell the businesses to do? You know, I mean, what is it, lower production, you know, or change the way you do things?
A combination of a lot of things. Probably the most significant was Congress and state regulators in California requiring that auto manufacturers design not just more fuel-efficient vehicles, but lower-emitting vehicles. So California has the strongest regulations on that in the world. So we're the beneficiaries. The fuel standards are different here too. Other states,
like a major difference. That's like my car didn't pass. So it continues.
Well, interesting because especially in San Diego County or Imperial County, you can always tell when you're driving behind a car that filled up in Mexico. There's more sulfur in their fuel, and you can really smell it. In California fuel, it is cleaner. It's a little more expensive, but I don't think too many people are complaining about it. I just spent $50 to fuel up yesterday in my car.
Yeah.
And you know, thankfully I'm self-employed, so I can write some of that off. But yeah. a lot of people don't, and they don't care. I mean, we're still driving huge vehicles. But back to your question, we don't have as much manufacturing, dirty manufacturing, as we did.
That's
the GM
true.
Plant is not here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Firestone had a big tire plant in Los Angeles. The manufacturing we're seeing is much cleaner. We're not a smokestack industry. Now, that's just not happening in California. Mm-hmm. It's happening all over the country. Manufacturing is occurring in other countries such as China, where they don't have environmental standards the way we
yeah,
do.
It's
so it's somewhat of a trade-off.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, this kind of delves into a different – it kind of crosses over into the different issue. As people are trying or, you know, legislation's trying to really protect the environment and they start to kind of regulate the private market a bit
mm-hmm.
and say, now you have to produce this, 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 and less of that. And there's really – you know, the whole supply and demand and being competitive with the other, you know, manufacturers, hasn't that really, you know, affected American-made cars and really affected their competition level? I mean, the fact that there just hasn't been, people weren't really buying as many hybrids or as many, you know what I mean? It was more expensive. There really wasn't a demand for it, you know what I mean? And they couldn't really compete with the Japanese or the foreign cars as much in that industry. And they were trying to say, now you can only do X, Y, and Z of this, this, and this. And that it really kind of, you know, made a dent in that, you know, the competition in the market and the livelihood for American-made, you know, American manufacturers.
There are a lot of factors, but I think you are going to see, and we are seeing a rebound in American-made vehicles. Now, remember, a lot of the Japanese automakers are actually building their cars in North America.
Right.
Tennessee. Unfortunately, we don't have that occurring in California anymore, but we used to. Alabama and all around the country, we're seeing parts made in this country and cars assembled in this country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you're right to a point. Oftentimes we lose sight of balancing job creation and environmental protection. In California, the voters tend to favor environmental protection over job creation, but if you go to Nevada, it's a different beast.
Mm.
So we don't see as many businesses as people say leaving the state, but we see them shifting jobs to mm-hmm. other states. They'll still stay in California. We have a highly skilled workforce in California. Our climate, you cannot beat California's
yeah,
climate.
You can't.
I mean, despite having
but
5 inches of rain the last couple of
yeah,
days,
yeah, yeah.
this is a great
but
climate.
But I mean, hasn't it? I mean, that's kind of a subtle way to put it. I mean, there has been a huge shift, don't you? Wouldn't you say with you know businesses in Los Angeles and I mean, what aren't we with the fifth? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't LA the fifth largest economy worldwide?
California is the eighth largest economy worldwide. LA County, or the LA area. I believe a 17th or 18th.
Oh, really? Okay, I thought it was like fifth.
Yeah.
But it's just in and of itself, it's a huge, huge, huge economy. But it's always been, and California has always been, you know, not it's bad business climate, right? For most employers. I mean, it's tougher on the businesses. You've seen a lot of them after the recession. I mean, Texas is doing great, and a lot of them have, you know, are leaving. And like you said, shifting. But I wonder if that's, you know, a greater impact than we realize, you know, over time.
Well, everyone has a different definition of business climate. Speaking
okay.
for myself as a business owner and a previous lobbyist for the LA Chamber and other business groups, yeah, I spent a lot of time at City Hall saying that the business climate needs to be improved, and
yeah.
the City Council largely ignored it. Maybe because
yeah.
I was ineffective,
yeah.
I wasn't nice, or whatever. So on Off the Presses, we talk about these issues
yeah.
and how the city of Burbank has no gross receipts tax. City of LA has one of the highest gross receipts tax in the country. That is a business climate issue that is very hard for LA to address. That being said, our utility rates in the city of LA are lower than Burbank. So some of these things balance themselves out, but I think a lot of businesses want to be here in LA because of the prestige
mm-hmm.
of being, you know, having Los Angeles on your letterhead, having 90012 on your letterhead.
Right.
On the other hand, we lost one of our four Fortune 500 companies this past year. Northrop Grumman, been headquartered in Century City
uh-huh.
for decades, decided to move to the Washington, D.C. area. They're now
really?
Based in Virginia.
Because of costs? Costs of doing business here?
There are lots of factors.
Yeah,
they saw that their public reason was that since they have so much business coming out of defense and NASA, they wanted to be where their competitors were, in that Washington, D.C. area. That makes a lot of sense.
Right.
But remember, these are publicly traded companies. Shareholders demand cost savings. In this recession, where we are seeing corporations downsize as well as government, it's very important to stress productivity.
Is government really downsizing?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? They created so many jobs. They're creating tons of jobs. No.
Yeah, but
no.
Not for government jobs.
No. Am I missing? No, what are you saying? I thought government's growing, like with the Obama administration, all the different people he's brought on, and what do you mean by government downsizing?
Okay, well, let's focus first on L.A., city
okay.
of L.A.
Okay, you mean city.
The county and state of California.
Mm-hmm.
Because of a lot of cost issues, including reduced tax revenues,
mm-hmm.
We are not able to pay all the employees we had working for the government.
Okay.
So some of them have been asked to retire early and get what's called a golden handshake. However, most public employees have very generous pension benefits. So that's another thing we talk about on our show, and I'm sure we put half our audience to sleep, is unfunded pension liabilities.
Uh-huh.
A lot of our public pension systems were based on a assumption that they would be getting an 8% return on their investments every year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we all probably invest in the stock market. Does anyone make 8% return on the stock market, even a good year? Maybe once in a while. But in a bad year, that really hurts the pension systems. And as a result, the taxpayers and the employees themselves are going to have to plug those holes.
Right.
Mm.
Wow. So now, what are some of the concerns that LA has these days? You know, I mean, I know we have... Is our mayor very popular, or is he not?
It goes through cycles. I don't think any elected official today is very popular because so many things are going wrong. Often it's out of their control.
Mm.
Term limits is another issue that comes up on almost every show. The voters enacted term limits in California in 1992 for state legislators.
Mm-hmm.
County and LA voters followed suit a few years later. So we have skilled politicians representing us, but they're not good policymakers.
Mm.
It's very disconcerting spending time at a legislative hearing or a city council meeting and listening to them interact with each other. Most of them are very nice people. We've had many of them on our show, but very few of them have a grasp on more than one or two issues.
Really?
And these are really, you know, they should look at themselves more as employers and financial managers. The budget of the city of L.A. is $7-8 billion.
Really?
But they don't talk about fiscal issues very much, even in a recession. They talk about, you know, the fun things, the ribbon cuttings, and doing press releases on good things.
Is that shocky, though? I mean, it's like you kind of don't want to think it's true, but it's just so falls in line with the L.A. vibe, you know?
It's human nature.
It's human nature, but it's my friend said this. He's like, L.A., when you go to visit L.A., it's like the parents have gone away. And they're not coming back. And everybody gets to kind of get away with whatever they want to a degree.
Yeah.
And it's like, rock and roll. Everything's got to be rock and roll, you know. And so to think that politics aren't going to delve into the rock and roll vibe of L.A., you know, it's kind of funny.
It's Hollywood, right?
But back to your question, you know, comparing Antonio Villaraigosa to the previous mayor, Jim Hahn.
Uh-huh.
You know, Jim Hahn was what some people would call a career politician, but he was also very much a policy wonk.
Mm-hmm.
He was not a good politician as far as the touchy-feely stuff and reaching out to people. He wasn't comfortable being on the public stage, especially here in the San Fernando Valley. But he was very interested in say, housing issues, fiscal management, what was occurring at the Port of L.A.
Mm-hmm.
As far as imports and exports, as well as improving the air quality.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately for him, he got caught up in a scandal where his administration was accused of using DWP resources to combat Valley secession.
Really?
Remember, which was on the ballot in 2002 or 3.
Yeah. The Valley wanted to go on its own, you know, not be part of L.A. A few years ago, right? That never materialized, though.
Well, it was on the ballot, and state legislation really made it impossible for the Valley ever to secede. I'm not sure that would have been a good thing anyway. It became a citywide vote instead of the traditional way of a section of a city voting amongst themselves whether they want to be part of a city or apart. So citywide, it failed miserably. In the Valley, the margin, 51% of voters favored secession, 49% opposed secession. So even in the Valley, there wasn't strong consensus of what that was going to be. But, you know, the Valley secession folks never defined a vision for what the Valley would become. A lot of the people involved with Valley secession were homeowner groups who didn't like the development that they thought was being approved by downtown bureaucrats. So were they going to be in charge of a new city? And if we're going to be anti-development, where was our tax revenue going to come in? So those issues were never really hashed out in my mind. But back to Antonio Villaraigosa, this is a very charismatic, nationally known figure who seems to love the
limelight.
he likes the limelight. He loves being at press conferences. And I've known him since he ran for the state assembly in 1994. Uh-huh. I think he's much smarter than people give him credit for. I think he has, in the last few months, been re-energized to address some of the serious problems we have. But there seems to be a 2 or 3 year gap when he first got elected and the economy was going great and he wanted us to be the greenest city in the world, to have more police per capita than anywhere else, and a lot of other things that everyone agrees with. But unfortunately, a recession occurred and he was not able to deliver. Mm. He's also refocused energy on education reform.
Mm. Now, is he a popular mayor? I mean, what are like the public opinion?
I have not seen anything come out in the last few months. Mm-hmm. And I think in the last month, his popularity would probably be higher.
Oh, really?
Seems like everyone wants to beat up on the teachers' unions these days.
Yeah.
Teachers' unions are not very popular. Republicans retook Congress partially because of their criticism, not just of labor unions, but specifically public employee unions, and perpetuating the perception that public employees or public servants just sit around on long coffee breaks and are very rude to citizens who need some delivery of services. Antonio Villaraigosa remains very popular among Latinos and working class families.
Right.
We have a lot of those in the city of L.A. He does not poll as strongly in the San Fernando Valley and in West L.A. Now, the San Fernando Valley is getting more liberal than it has ever been.
Oh, really?
Yeah, partially because of the influx of Latinos as a voting bloc,
right,
and the growth as a population. But also, I think the Republican Party has left many of the Republicans behind who still live in the Valley, who tend to be moderate. Mm-hmm. They're moderate on social issues such as abortion and school prayer. The public schools in the Valley have been among some of the best in the country, and a lot of that is because of the community involvement in communities that used to be Republican strongholds such as Woodland Hills, Tarzana, Porter Ranch, Chatsworth, Northridge.
Right.
But the Republicans that really catch a lot of the limelight in the media tend to be against all that stuff. They tend to be against environmental regulations that saw the Valley improve air quality the past 30 years. They're against funding of public education, which among all voters is the largest priority mm-hmm. as far as government spending.
Right.
Also, the Democrats have been very smart in figuring out a formula that allows them to portray themselves as moderates on crime issues. You have more Democrats today who support the death penalty. They support the police, and the police unions tend to back the Democrats, not so much because they agree on crime policy, mm-hmm. but because of collective bargaining agreements. Democrats seem to be more sympathetic to helping public employee unions, which police and firefighters are, have better contracts. They have higher salaries, better benefits, etc.
But it sounds like what you're saying are more, this is perceptions of Republicans, these are perceptions of Democrats, these are kind of their strategies, or their bartering, as you said. I mean, going back to the whole, like, unions and government funding of, you know, employees and things like that, couldn't you agree that it's not necessarily, it's easy to kind of paint stroke over something, go, they don't want them to have, you know, jobs that make money, they should just be public servants, when really, maybe there's a system that's broken here. It's that, you know, there's a mismanagement. There's an abuse here, just like in so many other different systems we've got going on. I mean, we do know that some of the unions are crazy. We do know that some people get a percentage increased every year, even if they don't meet their standards and their quality. And we've got, you know, we've got a crippled, you know, economy in Los Angeles and all over LA. And, you know, you kind of go, hey, it's not that we're against, you know, helping people out. It's just, is this really helping people out? Is this really, you know, rewarding the people that are hardworking teachers, or is this allowing complacency? Is this just allowing, you know, is this, you know what I mean? And I think that just asking those questions or, you know, kind of examining the systems does not necessarily mean you're against, you're not compassionate, or you're not, you know, and I think Republicans kind of take a flack that's not necessarily because they're against it. It's just, you know, hey, we've got kind of a broken system here. Boom. You know what I mean?
Yeah, all of the above. Perception, especially in politics, is reality. So if one party does a better job of portraying the other party,
regardless
of
truth, it's just branding.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, the truth is somewhere in between, and that's where our show tries to be more relevant, is figuring out what the truth is and letting our listeners make up their own minds.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, though, that we're in a – probably for the – the near and long-term future, we're in a period where governments are going to have to downsize. They're going to have to make very tough decisions on whether to lay off employees, play a little hardball with the public employee unions, just to stay solvent. We're starting to see cities in California declare bankruptcy. We are starting to see counties think about, to have that discussion of declaring bankruptcy. Former Mayor Dick Reardon and someone else we've had on our show a couple times have written two op-eds, one in the Wall Street Journal, one in the New York Times, saying that the city of L.A. is on the road to bankruptcy within 1 or 2 years if they do not address their pension problems. Now, but the elected officials, this is something that's way over their heads.
Blinders. Do you feel like people have blinders on with this? Or?
Yeah, and most of the, but, you know, in fairness to the city council, and we elected them, by the way.
Okay.
They didn't appoint themselves. We elected them.
Right.
Now, some of them had huge advantages as far as money from certain special interests, but we elected them. In fact, the Daily News on the front page has a column from Kerry Kavanaugh listing all 15 LA City Council members and how many voters actually showed up to vote for them.
Yeah.
Not a single incumbent on the LA City Council received more than 15% of votes from their constituents.
Right.
Now, they all got more than 50% of the voters who showed up, but that means 85% of the voters didn't care.
Don't care, right. Yeah.
So back to my point, very few elected officials, not just on the LA City Council, but state legislature, come from a private sector background where they were actually financial managers, looking at a balance sheet, you know, paying attention to productivity, paying attention to their bank accounts, reading newspaper articles and magazines, projecting what the economy is going to be in the next year or two to make decisions. With term limits, that takes away the incentive to think for the long term.
Right.
Because you need instant gratification. If you are termed out next year and you're in a mindset, wow, I can do this job, people like me, people are blowing smoke at my rear end, you know, I might be able to run for a higher office and eventually I could run for governor or something like that.
Right.
You need to do something that is going to resonate with more voters than something that isn't. If you want to go around and be honest with your constituents, say, we are looking at bankruptcy because we haven't managed our finances well, that's going to get a lot of boos and catcalls. But if you have a town hall meeting and say, I'm going to hire 100 new police for my district, yay, everyone jumps up, and no one asks, well, how much is that going to cost?
Right, yeah.
Finally, we're starting to have conversations, see conversation at the LA City Council about the cost. A lot of that is driven by a former police chief, Bernard Parks, who also has the most generous city pension, I think, of any retired city employee.
Really?
So he has an ability. So he's very smart, and he does concede that yes, he is getting a generous pension, which gets other people wondering, you know, Bernard Parks is making $170,000, whatever it is, with a free car in the LA City Council. Why does he need that pension?
Yeah.
What are other retired police doing? I think a lot of politicians are very they're unable to address serious problems. They don't want to anger anybody, especially a block of voters, and it's very rare to find that that office holder today who is willing to address issues. Now, one of the lead stories in the local papers today is that former city controller Laura Chick, who'd been hired by Governor Schwarzenegger 2 years ago as an inspector general to monitor federal stimulus dollars in California and how they're being spent, is being let go by Governor-elect Jerry Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what he is saying, and there is some grain of truth to this, is that Laura Chick's job at the state level is redundant. There's already a state auditor doing a lot of what Laura Chick did, and I know they were fighting over budget dollars. I think Jerry Brown is looking for a simpler government that is going to be easier for him to monitor. He's not even hiring a chief of staff, which is almost unheard of.
Really?
Anywhere in the world, he wants to be his own chief of staff, at least for the time being.
Uh-huh.
Now, the funny thing, or the one of the...
Is that because he wants to cut costs and things like that, or
well,
does he
part,
feel...
part of it's costs. Laura Chick's office only will save taxpayers $770,000.
Yeah, that's
so
not
that,
much.
That's,
yeah.
That's a drop in the bucket. State auditor budget is a few million, and I think a lot of it, Jerry Brown just... wants to hold people accountable. When you have two folks doing almost the same job, how do you hold one of them accountable? That's one of the issues we have, issue we talk about on our show all the time. Do we have too much democracy? Is it too hard for voters to hold anyone accountable? The funny thing about Laura Chick is that when she was sworn in for her second term as city controller 4 years ago, Attorney General like Jerry Brown swore her in, mm-hmm. and now he's letting her go.
Yeah.
so politics is not kind, but there's a lot of speculation Laura Chig will move back to L.A. She still keeps her house in Silver Lake, that she might be interested in running for mayor in 3 years.
Really? Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Now, Jerry Brown, you know, you brought him up. How do you think he's going to deal with the unemployment? I mean, California, they just released some information or some data that California is like third from the bottom as far as unemployment. In other words, we have like 12.5% unemployment here, which is almost unheard of.
Yeah, in some counties, especially in the San Joaquin Valley, which is a lot of agriculture, its unemployment is 19-20%.
Really? Wow.
Is that north or central?
Like central? That's central.
I drove through that.
That's the breadbasket.
They have all their signs out, too.
About water.
Water. They are pissed.
Really?
They are pissed.
And a lot of that is out of any governor's control. The San Joaquin Valley is the agricultural capital of the world. We could feed the entire hemisphere from the San Joaquin Valley.
Really?
There's so much production there and so many jobs. A lot of those jobs are seasonal.
Right.
So some of those folks are going to be out of work from time to time. The water issue is, to me, next to the financial situation, $28 billion budget deficit, water is the biggest crisis confronting California because a lot of it is based on environmental regulations imposed by Congress and federal courts about protection of endangered species.
Like a rat, right?
A fish this big called the Delta smelt.
Uh-huh.
We pump billions of gallons of water every year from the Sacramento Delta area to Southern California. Mm-hmm. When the smelt population reaches a certain point, meaning it's been reduced to a certain point, it's usually because they got sucked into the pumps, and the federal courts will stop pumping. So that puts our water availability at risk.
Right.
In the San Joaquin Valley, water has been cut off from time to time, and the farmers use that. Or they say that they're not able to produce crops from sometimes because of a lack of water.
Uh-huh.
But part of it's also environmental.
Right.
The snow cap in the Sierra, because of we're going through a period on this planet where the Earth's temperatures are warmer, the snowpack is at a lower level than we have seen in maybe over 100 years. Mm. I mean, we're finding plane crashes from World War II era.
Really?
Yeah, because the snow has melted, and now they've found a couple planes that disappeared. Now, rainfall has been a little better the last couple of years, but we're still in a drought situation. I think one of the things that Jerry Brown wants to address that he was not able to address as much as he wanted to when he was governor the first time is not just water availability and delivery for everybody, but how we use water. Because of we mentioned CEQA earlier and other environmental considerations, it's very hard to build a dam anymore. The salmon populations suffer. And the environmental lobby is very influential, and sometimes I think that's a good thing. And that's myself speaking. I'm an outdoors type of guy.
Uh-huh.
So I think what Jerry Brown wants to do is a lot of things that this governor and the previous governor wanted to do. Things like conservation, you know, more water-efficient products. Not only has air quality improved in the San Fernando Valley the past 30 years, we're using the same amount of water today that we used 20 years ago.
Oh, really?
20 years
ago.
Wow. Even though
I've been taking more showers lately, it's
Well, you got to save water, so you might want to share the shower with someone else.
There you go.
To save water. But seriously, there's a lot of water runoff going into the street, straight into the ocean. That's a violation of the Clean Water Act, and it pollutes San Pedro Bay and Santa Monica Bay. There are efforts underfoot to reclaim more of that water, treat it so we could be using that. It's called water reclamation or water recycling. Mm-hmm. There was supposed to be a water bond on the ballot this past November, but it was clear the voters would turn it down, so the legislature took it off. But there was money to help counties and other agencies reclaim water so that we would have more of it. But we cannot depend on the Sacramento Delta for our long-term
Let's just recap for just a second. So you started off by saying, you know, obviously next to the financial crisis that we're in, the next thing would be the water issue.
In my opinion.
In your opinion. Okay. So obviously, like, California collectively, the needs are outrageous. I mean, it just seems like there's so many needs that needed to be taken care of yesterday, right?
Schools, healthcare.
Yeah, everything. Everything. Health. Everything's like red lights going off. Stat over here, paramedics. Like, It's too much to kind of take in as just a normal human, just me with ears right now.
Right. It's easier to ignore it.
And it's hard to prioritize, you know? It's hard to kind of go, who needs what? What do we need? This is long term. This is immediate, blah, blah, blah. So, you know.
And everything affects everything else.
Everything's connected.
It does.
So, I mean, when you talk about the water situation, I kind of go, okay, yeah, he's right, but that's long term, or not long term, but it's been going on, and it's something that's going to catch up to us, just like we ignore the bad business climate. Mm-hmm. It's going to catch up, and we're going to get bankrupt. I mean, what do you think right now California needs the most, as far as, like, the most to just get it kind of functioning?
Well, we need leadership, and what's interesting about Jerry Brown, just as a political observer, is – this is someone who has run for president several times based on his leadership in a prior life of California.
Right.
But he's at an age where that's off the table.
Right. Yeah.
So already you are seeing Jerry Brown take on some of the sacred cows and look people in the eye who are always in Sacramento asking for more money and saying, you're not going to get more money next year. You're probably going to get even less money next year. And people are horrified, but it's actually – as horrifying as it is, as a parent with kids in public schools, and you know, we use a lot of the infrastructure, it's actually refreshing to hear an elected official tell me something I don't want to hear.
Yeah.
Because finally there's someone giving the rest of the legislators cover to start making the decisions that should have been made 5, 10, 20 years ago. But
right.
Again, back to term limits, when you have 2/3 of the legislature only serving 6 years
right.
in state government or as an elected official, How do they become experts in any of this? I spend time in Sacramento on occasion talking to freshman legislators, introducing them to certain issues that, you know, any corporation, they would have had someone with 20 years experience addressing.
Mm-hmm.
A shareholder of a publicly traded company would not tolerate a CEO who came out of nowhere.
No, but that's something that I find frustrating as well. Like, I mean,
it is, but we created it. The voters created this system with term limits, and one day we'll probably undo it. There are a couple things that are interesting, though, as far as political reform. A lot of people complain, myself included, that we've become a state and a country where it's Democrats and Republicans, and unless you subscribe to the strict party line, mm-hmm. where do we go?
Right.
But we've had a closed primary system in California for decades where only Democrats can vote in the primary and only Republicans can vote in their primary. As a result, the party's nominees have pandered to the far left and the far right.
Right. So you get both extremes.
You get both extremes. It's very rare to have someone who's comfortable incorporating arguments from both sides.
Right.
And most Californians probably are middle of the road.
Yeah.
So that is being addressed, and I'll explain to you why. But another consideration is that the legislative boundaries have been drawn to protect incumbents and the parties, that the reelection rate is 99.99% for state and federal lawmakers from California. Two things have happened in the last couple of years. Prop 11 created a redistricting commission, meaning instead of legislators drawing the boundaries, it's now an independent commission drawn almost at random. No one's a partisan elected official. They will be drawing the boundaries.
Mm.
So after we get the census numbers later today, in fact, they will go to work on drawing boundaries that adhere to the Voters' Rights Act, which requires them to address racial and ethnic trends, geographic boundaries. They're trying to eliminate districts that are drawn to protect Democrats and to protect Republicans.
Right.
So that's redistricting. We also now have the open primary.
Mm.
Starting in 2012, everyone will be allowed to vote in the June primary. Actually, it might be March because of the presidential election, regardless of your party affiliation. Every candidate, regardless of whether they're a Democrat, Independent, Republican, Green, will be on the same ballot. The top two will end up on the November ballot. So you're going to have some cases where two Democrats will be fighting against, will be trying to win in November, or two Republicans trying to win in November.
Mm-hmm.
That means on paper that they're probably going to be going back to the middle, just as John McCain did when he ran for president.
Yeah.
Or anyone else running. You know, Meg Whitman's a better example, excuse me. She had to run to the right of where she wanted to be in the primary because Steve Poizner brought up immigration.
Mm.
So after she got the Republican nomination, she was almost dead meat for a statewide election because most Californians are uncomfortable talking about deportations, uncomfortable about asking people to carry papers with them.
Right, yeah. So you think that was the main reason she lost?
Well, this is a blue state. Democratic registration outnumbers Republican by 15%, but she was too easy for Jerry Brown to present. Actually, Jerry Brown didn't have to. She did it herself.
She
was on the air constantly, standing for very little. But when she had Pete Wilson telling us that she's going to be tough on immigration, that turned off the second largest voting bloc.
But doesn't, I mean, here's what I want to say. When you talk about these people not having the term limits that allow them to actually grow in these areas, let's just hold the boat for 1 second. What about people that have, I know government's not all fiscal, but look at like Meg Whitman, or you look at, you know, Carly Farina, and you look at their track record. You look at what they've done. And it doesn't mean that, I'm not saying they're perfect and that they're the most qualified, but comparatively speaking, when they have to look at the budget and they have to look at balances, they have to look at everything like that, and they have to be responsible, and they've been successful in that area. And then you look at the major need of California or LA right now, what we've agreed is the economy. Mm-hmm. And you go, this person has a track record of having to be successful in that area. To me, it's kind of like, looks like a good fit. Maybe it's not holistic, but it looks like a really good fit. And Jerry Brown, it's like, what has he really done comparatively on that level that really fits the need? I mean, one of the things that I saw in one of the debates with Carly is she said, you know, with most entitlement programs in California, that they get a 37% increase each year, regardless if they even meet their standards. Mm. And that there's just all this waste. There's waste. That goes unaccounted for. I can't remember how many billions of dollars. I think it's like one or two that they don't even account for. Now, if you're a CEO of a company, or if you're, you know, CFO or something, that's your ass.
Yeah, your shareholders won't tolerate that.
Yeah, you have to be accountable. And I'm not saying that makes them completely qualified in every area of government. But when you look at, man, right now, California's going down hard and fast. The train's left the station, and these people are actually have a good track record. I kind of go, you know what? Let's let them in for a few years and clean this area up.
Right.
Well, and you bring up a good point, and that's why they, you know, came in second, is that they had a background that government is lacking. However, they had no governing background.
Exactly.
You need a balance of public policy as well as the ability to govern. Now, what Jerry Brown is doing
governing,
right now,
but what if you're running a company? I mean, there's leadership.
I'm not saying you can fire people.
But it's not an indication you'll be able to run a state.
But look at Jerry Brown. Like, what is he really, like, his governing skill? Like, what did he really, really get done? I mean,
well, but he does have connections in politics, though, you know, which would help him.
I'm just saying, like, just because he's maybe a career politician or he's had a long time, you know, working it on that element, it's like, look at results. You know what I mean? Look at results to results. And
okay, well, let's look at results.
Yeah, no, I'm asking.
So when Jerry Brown was governor, the budget was always balanced.
Mm.
Taxes never went up under Jerry Brown.
He didn't raise taxes in the 70s?
Did not raise taxes.
Mm. No?
Did not. And Meg Whitman was vilified even by some Republicans for lying about Jerry Brown's record, which hurt her credibility. And even when they pointed out that she was basing her arguments erroneously on numbers that occurred when Duke Majan was governor, she refused to take her ads down. Now, you're also talking about someone who didn't vote for 28 years, didn't take an interest. But I think we do need some people like Meg Whitman and Carly Farina, even Bill Simon, who ran against Gray Davis and lost. But they often start out too high. You know, what if Meg Whitman had run for lieutenant governor?
Right.
And developed some skills.
So they're shooting for the top before they're really qualified.
Yeah, it seems like they're unemployed and on a whim. Hey, I should be governor.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that, you know, when you see these huge mega companies and people have, I feel like in many ways that instantly makes them go up the ranks. Over a lot of people that have learned how to, like, you know, cut ribbons and shit like that.
Yeah,
you know?
And Carly got fired because she wasn't running her company very well.
Yeah,
and hasn't had a job since.
Yeah, but
HP.
That's the thing. You know, you can know how to run a company, and you're right. It does have an advantage, but there's so much else to politics.
No, I'm recognizing that it's not necessarily holistic. It's not – government's not just fiscal, but when you're saying this is our biggest crisis right now, is this, and it's a crisis, and you see people that – this is what I do. This is what I've been successful at. You know, even if she did get fired, look how well she ran that thing until she did get fired. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like,
I don't know. My HP stock wasn't doing very well during the Fiorina era.
Well, my point is I think that there's some track record there. You know what I mean?
There is.
And it's kind of like looking at, like, you know, these career politicians versus people that have really gone out and done something, you know, in a
true
way. And that makes me go.
You know, there's some career politicians who are a disgrace, and there are other people who've been in office for a long time. and do a very good job. Henry Waxman, who was on my show a few months ago, wrote a very interesting book about he's been in Congress since 1974. Prior to that, he's in the state legislature. He's been able to get a lot of things done, and you may not agree with them, but he couldn't get them done without Republican support. Mm. But he's able to reach out to Republicans who he'd worked with for many years, and they had that trust where their word was gold. They appreciated where the other one was coming from. I think that's something that Jerry Brown brings to the table that Meg Whitman didn't. She did not know any of the personalities in Sacramento or have any institutional memory. What Jerry Brown has done, I've talked to several Republican lawmakers who are very impressed by this. Jerry Brown has reached out to them and has told Republicans that they're going to have a seat at the table and he's going to incorporate some of their suggestions. And so far, they like hearing that because the previous Republican or the current Republican governor wasn't always doing that.
Right.
Now, the other thing to keep in mind is Jerry Brown has indicated that there's going to be a special election sometime next year where voters will be able to decide between two initiatives, one that will raise taxes and maintain a lot of the programs that require government spending, and the other initiative will be to not raise taxes and eliminate many of the programs that Californians have depended on.
Yeah.
So that's a good place for consensus, and it shows the Republicans that Jerry Brown is willing to have the conversation about making draconian cuts that most Democrats don't want to have.
Right, and that's a good place for us to wrap up. We are out of time. Brendan Huffman, the show is
off the presses.
That's tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Brendan, just quickly, what is it that you do in your private life when you don't do the show?
I do public affairs, which is a political term for public relations. I work with clients who are trying to raise their profiles with opinion leaders, whether it be elected officials or media. And you can go to my website, which is HuffmanPA.com.
Sounds good. Brendan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Very enlightening.
And we normally don't talk politics, but I think when someone like you comes in, it really, you know, it enlightens us. So
I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too. Kira, thank you so much. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
We'll be back here tomorrow.
Been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and originates from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. For questions regarding the show or to learn more about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondents to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.